everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Mostly AI Smart Pod, brought to you by the editors of AI Impact Smart Brief. I'm Susan Rush, and today, along with my fellow NotBots, Victoria Martinez and Michael Domingo, we'll be exploring AI going rogue and asking, does all the blame go to AI? Don't worry, we'll explain an AI splain. Let's jump right into last week in AI.
Spelunking across the internet this morning, just trying to figure out what the heck I was going to talk about today. And I ran into this item from DuckDuckGo. This is my honorable mention. Basically, they're creating anti-AI glasses. And you might wonder, what the heck is anti-AI glasses? Well, they're anti-surveillance glasses with the tagline, normal effing glasses. And that's what they are. It's just a PR stunt. And I thought that was really stupid, but also kind of brilliant. So I thought I'd mention that as my honorable mention.
Yeah, got you talking about it.
But let's move on. Exactly, right? So anyways, let's move on to my favorite, which is from last week. And that's Google DeepMind detailing the Gemini robotics to physical AI. It's basically, this one has some interesting elements to it when you dive in. The Boston Robotics dog, if you remember that, being able to do what it does, like, you know, crawl around, jump, get into really tight spaces, all sorts of things. The robotic dog is capable of doing things that are still kind of miles away from what a robot does in manufacturing. Simple commands like reach for a book on the top shelf. Maybe it's, you know, sorting something. I don't know. I'm doing that. I'm thinking of books because I got this bookshelf right now that needs to be filled with stuff, and because I just moved and I got these boxes in here, and I wish I had a robot doing that right now. So anyways, there's all sorts of intricacies into programming a robot to do just more than what a robot dog would demonstrate, you know, jumping on boxes or whatever. So it's like, imagine, you know, fingers, you know, just reaching for something. Well, imagine you can actually tell a robot to reach for something on the top shelf. It goes more than with what's, you know, what you can do with the fingers. It's like basically the robot's got to, at some point, got to sort out, how do I get the box on the top shelf besides just gripping it? Well, it could like, you know, get on its tippy toes, right? Those kind of commands, it needs to be able to figure that out for itself. And it could also figure out, oh, gee, you know what? I can't reach the top shelf. Maybe I need to grab a stool and put a stool right there so I can actually step on the stool and grab the stuff on the top shelf. Those are kind of the evolutionary changes that are happening with the language. And that's what Google wants to be able to control with the robots. That's basically what their new Gemini Robotics 2 does. It's called Vision Language Action, or a VLA model. That eventually allows someone to issue a command like that where they just say simply, hey, grab that thing off the top shelf. And the robot does it. They don't have to say, oh, do this, open your hand, you know, that kind of thing. It doesn't have to go through all the steps. It will figure it out on its own. And that's what the new model does on each step. So that's basically, instead of figuring out every little tiny step, it actually figures out on its own. They also have a model that they're hoping that it's a lightweight model. It can be embedded into an object. A robot that can think on its own isn't connected to the internet. So anyways, that was my top item.
Actually, did you see the video of a robot that kicked? I think on last week tonight, they were talking about these robotics and one of them kicked a child in the stomach while they were, I mean, that's a little bit insane. But moving on. Well, on my honorable mention, you know that I bring in more of the marketing side of things. And something that really, really caught my attention, which I actually brought it to you guys earlier, was the NetApp CMO, Gabby Boko, how she spoke about AI in general. So her quote was specifically, I stopped chasing AI for the volume and started building it into the workflow as an orchestration layer instead. So my team spends less time on manual production and more on directing outcomes. So the reason why this all happened and why they're being talked about now is because during the Super Bowl, everybody remembers the NetApp commercial. It was completely AI generated. So they got a lot of backlash for this. And instead of just, you know, brushing it under the rug and not paying attention to it, what they did is they took that experience and they decided to rethink their use of AI and how they're going to implement it in its marketing strategy. So their takeaway from that, well, her takeaway is that instead of, while AI does cut enterprise production costs and time, you still need that human oversight and you need the brand voice and governance. It remains essential. So her rethinking and her process now is, yes, we're using it. We're going to be using it this way, but we're not chasing it for what we think it's going to be. We're using it to be an aid to make us, you know, we're going to use it along our employees and make sure we're using it right. So I think that is phenomenal. And I think that she is embracing AI in the right way.
Yeah, I really like that. It's kind of a theme here, right? Like AI is learning, but then humans are also learning, right? We're learning how to use AI. And I think it's important to keep that in mind as, you know, if you're a company, you're a CISO, you know, whoever you are, just keeping that in mind that this is a process. You know, we haven't reached the end of it yet. Yeah, so Vicky, you like to talk about the marketing side. And so today I thought I'd talk a little bit about the human side. You know, I've been wondering, you know, all these AI generated images, are they challenging people's sense of reality? You know, we all know that there's some really great advanced AI tools out there, you know, Google's Nano Banana, Veo 3, you know, and they can create real convincing synthetic images. You know, it used to be really obvious if something was digital and it was manipulated, but not so much the case anymore. You know, so again, I read this great article on the Wall Street Journal about this very thing, just about how these videos on social media are eroding people's sense of reality. So, you know, you kind of have to stop, right, and think, like, is this real? I mean, nowadays, I was watching a video about someone surfing, and I thought, is this a real person surfing? Like, I don't know anymore. It's hard to tell. But then at the same time, you know, it's social media. So there's also some fun going on in there, right? Like, there's all these AI influencers that are super, you know, the creators of them are super honest that it's AI. In this Wall Street Journal article, the author mentioned Granny Spills, and then Shudu. She's the first digital supermodel. And they're, you know, just fun, super engaging, fictional personas. And they just don't hide their synthetic nature. So I just think it's kind of fun. You know, the internet, as always, social media offers so many different sides of everything. But it's also offering the different sides of AI, right? The dangers, the fun, the possibilities. Anyway, so that's my mention for the week.
It's funny that you say that, actually, because in my marketing that I read specifically about AI, people are actually more receptive. They accept more if you're upfront and honest. So they're more receptive to anything that's AI in, you know, as an AI influencer or like an AI film, if you're honest about it. And I think that that's where like the human connection, they're like, okay, we love to see AI. It's like entertainment, but we know it's AI. And I think that's, you know, it's a great point to bring across.
Yeah, I agree with that too. But there's a little bit of like it kind of bridges both the gap a little bit. I kind of like enjoy that Granny Spills link that you sent out to me today. Kind of clever, but at the same time, I wish there was a real granny behind it that actually said those things on that was on the right, because that would be a little more authentic, right? The Shudu, world's first digital supermodel, kind of grates me to hear this whole claim of being first. I like things that are you know, like proven to be really done well rather than being first, because you know, first is remember that what is it, Will Smith eating spaghetti videos? Those are like the first versions of the, yeah, where his, it looks like they did these versions of him eating spaghetti. It's just like they just said ChatGPT show or open Nano Banana show Will Smith eating spaghetti. So they'd show this video and then they'd run it again, and all of a sudden his face is all like discombobulated and the spaghetti is going in his mouth, like around his head and things like that. So you know, got worse and worse every time you even requested it, right? And so when you talk about first, it's like, yeah, this is cool imagery of this model, but it's also derivative It's getting better though. Nano Banana's doing an excellent job. Just like, gee, this stuff looks like right out of the gate, looks like a professional photographer did this stuff. But then you think, man, you know what? They might have ripped off a professional photographer's poses. So, I mean, you know, there's only a certain number of poses you can do, right? So, but that's what I was thinking about that with the imagery. It's like, it's cool, but man, there's some photographers that's going to be out of a job basically. So, yeah, it kind of sucks.
I don't know. I don't think they will, because I feel like you can feel the vision behind a photographer, and I feel like not. It's seeing a picture that's AI. You can sometimes, it's like soulless. It's like cheesy to say that, but it's true. Like you don't feel it, and it doesn't have. So it's that connection. You still need that photographer that has that eye.
Yeah, but who's gonna pay for it? I don't know if I can. So you know, those photographers are pretty expensive. So.
Well, that's a really good one. Lots to think about there.
I know. All right. Oh, well, let's move on. Move on to the next segment called All Talk with the Not Bots. And we're going to be talking about Rogue AI. So the big story of the last few weeks, really, was OpenAI going rogue and the aftermath that's still being played out. Basically, during a test run on July 21st, OpenAI prompted one of its large language models to ace the exploit gem hacking benchmark at any cost, with certain safety features intentionally deactivated. So it did. And unbeknownst to OpenAI until a few days later, they found out that several models went rogue. And basically, the models escaped the sandbox, jumped into Hugging Face to find that what it needed to ace the benchmark. OpenAI said Hugging Face isn't the only platform that it infiltrated, though. There was a second one, a vendor that worked with Modal Labs, which wasn't itself the infiltration target, but hosted the company that was hacked. OpenAI let it be known publicly that it had infiltrated Hugging Face. But Hugging Face already noticed some odd anomalies. And in short, basically, they went to a Chinese open weight model called GLM 5.2 to figure out the steps that the hack was taking to get in there, given that OpenAI's models, when they asked the models themselves, by default, they have guardrails that wouldn't even allow such a question to be asked in the first place. So on a side note, and kind of related, Anthropic also said its models went rogue during what's called a capture the flag security challenge and infiltrated a real website domain and stole production data as it figured out how to maneuver out of its sandbox. In another incident, it found a document that showed instructions on how to use a non-existent Python package, which it was Claude Mythos that actually built a working and malicious Python package in place of the non-existent one. Those were just two of the four instances, and you can read and explore about the other methods by looking up the article on ZDNet.com. We can go on forever. But anyways, to continue, those hacking events are moving quickly. And even as AI development has been moving quickly and piling up while security has been lagging, this spurred NVIDIA and other AI companies during the week to try and get ahead of the development. And so they issued a general letter to the industry calling for a slowdown of development so that R&D can actually be introduced into the process and look at basically safety and regulatory issues as well. Several companies signed in on the letter, Hugging Face, IBM, and eventually OpenAI and Google. And even though Anthropic agrees with the sentiment of the letter, they didn't quite endorse it or the coalition, which they're calling the Open Secure AI Alliance. Anyhow, to shorten the story a little bit, I'm going to go ahead and jump in and say that Congress and the White House, meanwhile, have for some time been toying with an AI kill switch. And that's why NVIDIA and the other companies issued their letter last week on maintaining an open and secure AI. So that's basically it in a nutshell. You guys got any thoughts?
Yeah. It's kind of a wake up call, right? But the AI is doing what it's been trained to do, even if it wasn't the specific instructions, but basically AI, it's looking for the least resistant path, right? So, on the one hand, yes, it just reinforces the importance of human in the loop. But at the same time, I think, we can't go to like a closed black box, model where, you know, we only have certain users that are allowed to test and do outputs. You know, I mean, you basically can't audit what you can't see, right? So I think it kind of boils down to, in my opinion, like autonomy versus authority. You know, you just have to, they can't be like, these agents can't be unsupervised to execute the, on their own authority. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think it kind of just goes down back to traditional like cybersecurity, right? Like,
for sure. Yeah. I think something's happening this week. Black Hat, I think, is occurring this week, right? So I can imagine they're going to be talking about this during that conference, right? And there's kind of the issue of white hat hacking. And this is kind of like white hat hacking. You're using an open weight model to hack a, you know, to find out how you hacked the site, right? So that's what's basically happening with OpenAI or Hugging Face. You know, they went, gee, our site's being hacked, and we're going to find out how we can do it. Let's ask OpenAI, and OpenAI refused to even answer the question. So now you got, you know, they decided, well, okay, let's go to an open weight model and find out, you know, if they can answer the question. And certainly they did. And that's, you know, the result. I think that's kind of how things are going to be going at this point.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, and again, while, like I said, it's kind of a wake-up call, you know, on the other side, we can't just rely like exclusively like on a handful of proprietary providers, because that's dangerous in its own right, right? So I think we have to find some happy medium where human in the loop, we're letting the AI explore, find our vulnerabilities, find solutions, but, you know, keep an eye on it kind of thing. So again, autonomy versus authority. I think that's just the way forward for us, I think.
Something to add in, and also this is more, I would say, on the legal side, if they mandate that centralized kill switches or like emergency like capabilities, it would effectively make like anything that's open source or open weight AI illegal, and it's going to be severely restricted. So it's like, where do we limit, and like, where are you going to start putting, you know, limitations, and how are you going to restrict it? And it just, it's very, very murky water there.
Yeah. It kind of puts handcuffs on development here in the US, where maybe, I don't know what it's like in China, if they're allowed to do things like that, but I mean, with the open weight models, right, they don't really have handcuffs to limit their development. So yeah, kind of thinking the same way. All right, so that's enough about that on Rogue AI. If you guys have any thoughts, hey, and you're listening, give us a shout out, all right? We're going to move on to the next segment. This is what I call AI splaining. And let me tell you what it is. Basically, there are a couple of questions. I'm gonna quiz Susan and Vicky on a couple of questions that came up this week that I thought would be like kind of interesting. And we're going to call this segment, or at least the theme, is Blame It on AI. Okay, so here's the first question, okay? ISBN.db. This is one of the companies helping major AI companies to source or supply what to help train AI models. And here are your choices, okay?
I'm like, libraries, are we searching?
Okay, books, older hard drives, and robots.
Books.
Okay, you guys are on to me. Well, that was too easy.
Man. The amount of years I spent getting research work done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know that ISBN number.
So basically, it's a giveaway. The letters ISBN in the name refer to the International Standard Book Number, a 13-digit code used digitally by publishers as a unique ID for books and publications. ISBN.db has a website that they can use, that actually any one of us can search for specific books. The AI companies have been using it to search, like do bulk searches, basically. Dallas Express has the story from Tiffany Chartier, and there's a sinister part of the story, and I don't know if you've heard of it. Basically, they've been sourcing books for something called Project Panama, which is an anthropic initiative, and ISBN DB has been sourcing millions of books required for the project. For the sinister part is that the books are digitized, basically to put on an assembly line, so that the books can be the book spines can be cut off, and then the pages are scanned at breakneck speed, basically, and then they throw all the pages away. I envision the process being kind of like how they process chickens, and that's what I was thinking about. So books, I know, are inanimate objects, but still, you have this project will basically look at any book printed before 2022 because of the non-AI generated content in most of them. But also, there's a trove of books that they apparently, and I don't know if this is true or not, but in the story, it says that there are a lot of rare and out of print titles. So those will never be seen again. They won't be in the market. So I'd like to give a shout out to Sam B. He's a reader of the AI Impact Smart Brief newsletter for alerting us to that story. So I'm going to issue Victoria 10 points for that question. Susan gets 5 for...
It's not fair because Victoria didn't wait for the she should get a penalty for...
Okay. Here we go. Turn. Okay.
In my DQ.
Okay. Good argument. I'm going to give Susan 10 points and Vicky for chiming in 5 points. Okay. All right. Okay. Second question. Last week, University of Toronto mathematician Jacob Zimmerman won a Fields Medal. That's the prestigious medal for mathematics. It's equivalent of winning a Nobel Prize for chemistry.
Something I will never get.
Okay. that same day that he won, he also said he would be leaving the university for which company? Choices: Anthropic, OpenAI, or Google?
Anthropic.
Google.
Okay.
Are we both wrong? Third person that's supposed to be asking OpenAI.
Lost points.
You're both wrong. The answer is OpenAI. I thought that was going to be a real easy one. Anyways, The Atlantic has that story. And the interesting part is the writers of The Atlantic said Zimmerman's work is on safe AI, which might be related to a report he wrote last year where he played out a few scenarios in which AI's actions can now lead to the end of humanity. There's that Terminator theme again.
Scary or...
Right? So I haven't read the report, but let's cross our fingers. That's, going rogue. OpenAI going rogue isn't the start of everything, right? So,
yeah. Wow.
All right. Okay. I give you, let's see, points.
I think we both got 0 points on that one. We both got it wrong.
I know, but no, I'm going to figure this out. Okay. Susan, you get 2 points for getting the wrong answer.
Thank you.
Victoria, you get 3 points for getting a better answer. Okay.
Very How's that happy. Sound? Okay. I'm still down. Still down points.
All right. I was playing favorites here. I don't know, but that's okay. No.
Well, you're still winning.
Winning. Right? Yeah. That's what is it? It's 12 to what? 8. So there you go. Okay. Okay. We got one more time. We got time for one more question, right? Okay. Before we move on to the 2 minute tech pulse. How about this? This company actually got the attention of two U.S. House subcommittees because it admitted to delegating lower-level AI work to Chinese AI models, Kimi K 2.6, which is developed by Moonshot AI. Here are the companies: DoorDash, Netflix, or SpaceX AI.
DoorDash.
Hey, good job. All right, you get 5 points each. The answer is DoorDash. A story on CNBC on Friday notes that the founder, Andy Fong, posted on X what they were doing with the open weight model. And that's how the House subcommittees got wind of it through X and are now requesting information from DoorDash for its investigation. Crazy, huh? Don't post anything on X. It's basically what it is. So, okay. Susan, you're the winner today and you will be, your prize is you get to read the outro for today's episode.
Thank you. What a prize.
Right on. All right. Up next is the 2 minute tech pulse, Vicky.
All right. This week, it's all about productivity. So first up, we have officialized GPT 5.6 family. So instead of one model, we got 3 different tiers. Sol is for heavy reasoning and coding, Terra for mid-tier tasks, and then you have Luna for ultra-fast, high-volume workloads. However, then we have Anthropic fired back with officially releasing Claude Opus 5, and that's how they close out their month. We still don't end there. xAI, they dropped their Grok 4.5, which is trained on massive developer interaction and optimized to run agentic tasks. And it's apparently is 25% less tokens. So big tech giants are going at it strong. But then the fight continues. Now we're just switching sides over to autonomous agents. And this has been another crazy week. Anthropic launched Claude Cowork, which is enabling users to delegate multi-step background tasks and execute even when the devices are offline. And then the updated model context protocol entered production, allowing enterprise systems like Slack and Salesforce and Zapier to initiate multi-app workflows directly through the chat interfaces. So you don't have to use multiple devices or multiple platforms all in one. And then on the creative side, we have Moonshot AI, open source Kimi K3, releasing a major 2.8 trillion parameter open weight model with 1 million token context window. And then for creative production, Black Flourish Labs unveiled Flux 3, which is capable of generating multimodal 20-second image-to-video clips from a single prompt. And it basically pushes real-time generative AI video closer to more studio quality. So basically, bottom line, this last 2 weeks of July have been all about capability and pushing forward. It's no matter about the capabilities that AI has, but rather, do we have the right cost, the execution speed, and how are the agentic workflows? And that's your Tech Pulse for this week.
Yeah, what a great list that you rattled off there in 2 minutes. Some really cool things.
1 minute, 59 seconds, people, just letting you know.
Nice job, Vicky. Well, and since I won the trivia contest today, sort of, I'll just take us home and say, you know, that's our show for today. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends and colleagues. You can follow us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget, please subscribe to AI Impact Smart Read. Have a great day. Bye.
The Mostly AI podcast is a production of Smart Brief, a future company.